It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now we go to private industry supporting on-site childcare centers for their workers. La Crosse headquartered Quick Trip just opened one for its employees, 168 spots, contracting with Massachusetts-based Bright Horizons, which calls itself the country's largest provider of employer-sponsored childcare, serving more than 1,300 employers globally. Join in on whether your company offers daycare, the cost for employees, what it means to you in staying on the job, 800-642-1234. Jamie Behrens is Vice President of Operations for Bright Horizons. Jamie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me this morning.
Good morning. John McHugh here as well, Quick Trip's Public Relations Director. John, welcome to you.
Thank you, Kate. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, John, let's start with you. Take us inside this decision. Why did Quick Trip create this childcare center for its employees?
Kate, this process, it was actually more than 5 years in planning. It starts with an annual review with all of our coworkers when we ask them, what benefits would you really find valuable? Now, that's intriguing coming from Quick Trip, where all the profits come back to our coworkers. So, last year, all of them got 12% cash bonus, 5% in their 401k. Didn't matter if they were full-time, part-time. But what we've learned is that that cash bonus or that 401k was not enough, especially for our young families. They wanted the opportunity to have their children here on campus with them. We have over 3,500 coworkers here in the La Crosse market with our production facilities, offices, and stores, and they said that's what they wanted. So we started 5 years ago in the planning process, and finally, as of yesterday, we're finally open.
Well, congratulations there. So this is interesting because this wasn't an idea that came out of the pandemic or it took shape before what we have seen of the workplace upheavals of the pandemic.
That's exactly right. As a matter of fact, as far back as almost 15 years ago, one of the things that we've learned through our coworkers, our young families, is that finding adequate childcare was a struggle. We've all heard the stories that as soon as you found out that you're pregnant, boy, you better get on a list or you won't be able to find childcare. It's been a huge stressor for our young families. And our goal is always, if we can, let's remove a stressor. That was a huge one. So it was long before the pandemic that this discussion ever started. So finally, 5 years ago, we really got the ball rolling and it really ramped up the last couple of years.
Jamie, to you now, Bright Horizons specializing in this employer-sponsored type childcare. Can you explain the process of working with companies like Quick Trip, which started the planning process over 5 years ago?
Yes, that's a great question. So we work really closely with our companies. We have an array of services that we can provide for employers, but specifically in regards to our on-site childcare solution, we have over 400 employee-based on-site childcare centers. So we have a really high level of expertise in that planning process. We work really closely with each of our clients to meet their needs around the desires of what they want for their center. We want to make sure we intertwine their culture and meet the needs of their employees. So each of the centers have very different dynamics based on what's important that clients work for. We have a consulting team who will help with the employer understand the demand and the size of the center that they would need. And we also have a new center development team that will support the project along the way, working collaboratively with the architect and contractor to ensure that we're meeting all the state and national regulations needed in early childhood.
It's interesting.
I was just going to say that you
match the company's internal culture, and I'm wondering what that's like when you how does that look and feel when you're talking about a childcare center on site?
So we talk about nursing mother rooms. What does that look like for their employees so they can come over to the center to nurse on site, to be with their children? For example, Quick Trip has what's called Steve's Kitchen. And it's a very integral piece of their culture. John, I don't know if you want to speak about Steve, but it's a place for children that can go in and do cooking projects with their teachers. But that was very important space for their teachers, as it was the founder's child. And it was an honorary space in remembrance of him. So really great touching space. So that makes our centers very unique and very special as we work with the clients.
That's really interesting. What types of companies, Jamie, do you usually, or what types of companies decide to contract with you? Is there a particular profile?
We have lots of different industries that we partner with. We partner with healthcare industries, financial industries, manufacturing, universities, tech companies, pharmaceutical, and family-owned businesses like Quick Trip.
We're talking about Quick Trip's newly opened employee child care center in La Crosse. John McHugh is here, Jamie Behrens. John is public relations director of Quick Trip, and Jamie is vice president of operations for Bright Horizons. You can join in about on-site child care, what you've experienced, 800-642-1234. John, you are starting with 168 spots, starting actually with 60 to ramp up to 168. Can you explain why you settled on those numbers, why you landed on them?
We actually did a demographic survey among all of our coworkers here in the La Crosse area to find out what the potential need would be. A couple of things. We wanted to make sure that we provided enough spaces for all those coworkers who would be in need of childcare. At the same time, the facility is large enough that if at some point in time we need to expand past that 168 children mark, we certainly could do that. But at the same time, we also wanted to start in an area and with a number size that was palatable to make sure that we worked well, that Bright Horizons worked well with us. So it's always good to start a little bit smaller than your final goal, and that's what we're doing.
Is Quick Trip subsidizing a portion of the child care costs, or are you charging market rate?
We are charging close to market rate. Having said that, Quick Trip has substantially subsidized the project. For example, the building that we're in used to be a former wellness center that required a massive amount of renovation to make it fit for what we really wanted to use it for. So that was hundreds of thousands of dollars. Quick Trip footed that entire bill. We're not going to pass that along to our coworkers' costs. At the same time, we wanted to be competitive in the market, realizing that we also don't want to hurt other childcare centers here in the La Crosse market and say, hey, you're undercutting our ability to provide services as well. So we thought there was also an ethical issue there.
What then happened to the wellness center as it morphs into a childcare center? It sounds like it was competing priorities or a new phase for the company.
Yeah, the wellness center actually was owned by a different firm, and they had closed. As you know, during the pandemic, a lot of wellness centers were not able to stay open. So they closed shop. So that's why the building was available. One of the benefits for us, though, is they had a large gym space, and we've kept that so that in those winter Wisconsin months, our young people will have an excellent place to play and get their exercise.
Infant care, smaller ratios, more specialized care. Is your center taking infants?
We are.
And what has the reception been like now that it has opened for the first day? And what have employees said who have a child there?
They have been ecstatic. We had a grand opening, a ribbon cutting ceremony a week and a half ago. So a lot of our potential parents were allowed to see the facility, and they were just floored by the quality of the building. Very impressed with the staff, very impressed with Bright Horizons. They're not just simply about childcare, but really about the educational process for our young people. And that whole piece was incredibly impressive for our people. We had several coworkers on Monday morning at our management meeting literally stood up and cheered to say, I finally dropped my child off here on the Quick Trip campus.
So if companies are thinking about this amenity now, what questions would you suggest they ask themselves before seeking out a company and creating a child care center on site?
Yeah, our first recommendation is to make sure you do your due diligence in finding a good partner like we have. Now, we've had a model in that format, and we've had on-site healthcare here at Quick Trip, but we partnered with an outside agency because we realized that we sell gasoline and hot dogs, that childcare, medical care, that's not our expertise. So we wanted to make sure that we partnered with people who were the experts in this area. So to do the due diligence, make sure you find the right partner. That's key.
John, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's an honor to be with you.
John McHugh is Quick Trip's Public Relations Director, and we're going to continue our conversation on childcare costs with Jamie Behrens, Vice President of Operations for Bright Horizons. Join in on childcare and your experiences. Maybe you have employer-sponsored childcare. What does that mean? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore employer-sponsored childcare, what companies do to support their workers' childcare needs. The Society for Human Resource Management, SHRM, they published a toolkit called Managing Work-Life Fit. Employers told them that offering on-site childcare reduced absenteeism and turnover, improved morale, and raised productivity. They also cited tax advantages, but many employers, according to SHRM, find running an on-site childcare facility cost prohibitive. Join in 800-642-1234. Jamie Behrens, Vice President of Operations of Bright Horizons, stays with us. Jamie, about 10% of our country's childcare programs closed down between 2019 and 2021, and that's from Childcare Aware. What is the state of childcare at this point in the pandemic?
That was an unfortunate statistic. As we all know, quality childcare was already hard to find prior to the pandemic and now continues to be. But we are seeing a continued strong demand for childcare. We're learning that working parents are really resetting and rethinking their priorities, and on-site childcare helps employees balance both work and life. And competing for top talent really has never been more difficult after the pandemic, as we all know. So employer-sponsored childcare is really a sought-after benefit.
So competing for top talent, and I want to talk a little bit about the wages of childcare, which have lagged considerably. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, median wage for childcare workers in our state, and this is from May of last year, was $12.37. And, you know, early childhood educators in Wisconsin, almost 20% are at the poverty rate, which is way higher than the general population. What needs to change?
We need society to understand what the value of high quality childcare is. The teachers in the early childhood field are an integral part of children's development and are really key success for the life of a child. So shifting our mindset of what value early childhood brings to every child when a parent drops off a child into a building and what they're giving. So I think that's part of it. We also need to recognize and increase the level of professionalism in teachers. Bright Horizons, in my opinion, does an excellent job. We give a really thorough, rich benefit package, including providing training and degrees for free for employees. So a teacher who works in our program can get an associate degree, child development degree, or a bachelor degree free. So really enriching those benefits for those teachers in the early childhood field.
Are employees making use of those benefits?
They are embracing those benefits. We have so many people who have graduated from our Horizon Teaching Degree Program that we have a graduation, and it's really an attraction tool for us as well to get employees to work for Bright Horizons. But they're being very well received, and we've been doing that for many, many years, much earlier prior than the pandemic as well.
I think what's often confusing as a parent, for many parents, is like you see this shockingly high cost of childcare and the low teacher wages and concerns over quality of care. And that is really confusing. Those two things just don't seem to click. Can you explain why that is, why you see such a high cost and such low teacher wages?
Yeah, there's many elements that go into operating a high quality child care center, and the cost really depends on a number of factors and decisions that the employer makes. Some would be the operating hours. If the operating hours for hospitals, we have longer operating hours, so that cost is higher for the employer because of we have to staff much longer. Subsidizing tuitions, as John mentioned, QuickTrip is helping subsidize the tuition so parents can access high quality programming, and then helping, as you mentioned, what they want to, how do they want to align the markets with the salaries of the employees. So that's why it's really important to have support from employers who can provide the childcare benefit for employees and really can make it more affordable for them as well.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Jamie Behrens about the needs for affordable childcare and on-site company-based childcare. Jamie is vice president of operations for Bright Horizons that specializes in employer-sponsored childcare around the world. You can join in on your experiences. Questions you have, 800-642-1234. Jamie, what tips do you have for families who are encountering wait lists and touring daycares at this point in anticipation of that first childcare experience in their lives?
Gosh, Kate, that's such a hard question because it's such a challenging time for families. And I've been there myself as a parent. I think it's a matter of don't give up, right? So wait lists can be long, but they can change based on if families move away or move out of, do not work for that employer. But it's a matter of what feels good, what feels good. Where can you drop your child off and know that your child is in the safety, is at the forefront, education philosophies is strong. But we have a great resource on our website for families to say, what do I look for quality childcare? Especially for those first-time parents. There's so much going on in their lives. There's so much overwhelming information, and finding childcare is a really big stressor. But I encourage them to start early. As John mentioned, we are sometimes one of the first people to find out if a parent is pregnant because we know they have to join wait lists early. But do your research and really make sure that you feel comfortable where your child is going so you can really be a valuable employee at your employer throughout the day.
Do you feel like Bright Horizons is in a different type of niche for childcare because it is so part and parcel to the company that it contracts with?
I do think so. I think that we also have a really great group of people supporting the company Bright Horizons. We have an education and training development team that really helps hone in our curriculum, and they're the experts and help us coach and train. And we just have a lot of great resources to make sure that we are really providing the most high quality experience for children and really setting them up for success in life.
We only have a minute or so left, and I'm just wondering, what does the future of childcare look like to you? What can change so that more families can be able to have access to high quality childcare and without breaking the bank?
We really just do need employers to help understand that this benefit is a huge attraction to retain and recruit their employees for their work environment. We know that employees are juggling multiple priorities at work and home, and that on-site childcare option definitely is a great solution to give families the balance that they need.
Companies have said, though, it's cost prohibitive. What types of barriers do companies see there when they look at the upstart costs of opening an on-site childcare facility?
There are different types of financial models that companies can look for, whether that is something that they pay for everything and we help manage it, or there's some options sometimes where we can help support financially in some markets. That's not available in all markets, but there is different options that Bright Horizons does provide for clients.
What do you see as a successful model that has perhaps persisted for many years at particular companies that you've worked with?
I think all three of our models, we have three different models, I think they're all successful, but it is really employers who really want to impact their workforce in the years to come. Not just right now after a pandemic where it's really hard to attract employees, but really that this is part of their culture and it's a stamp on who they are as an employer and what a whole family unit means to them by providing on-site childcare.
Jamie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Jamie Behrens is Vice President of Operations for Bright Horizons. And earlier we heard from John McHugh, who's Public Relations Director for Quick Trip based in La Crosse. Up ahead, a new report presents the workers' perspective on the Wisconsin economy. We examine the latest data on wages, jobs, disparities, and more. Join in on how you view Wisconsin jobs, the openings, the expectations in hiring, and more. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now to the state of working Wisconsin, the title of a report published by COWS, formerly known as the Center on Wisconsin Strategy. Unemployment was at a seasonally adjusted rate of 3% in July, the latest data out. There are more than 129,000 jobs listed on the Job Center of Wisconsin portal this morning. But a labor economist says that doesn't mean our state has become a workers' paradise. Join in on the job market you've encountered here, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Laura Dresser is Associate Director of COWS, the UW-Madison think tank researching Wisconsin economic and social problems. Laura, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, you found that workers are encountering better news than any year this century. What sectors in Wisconsin have benefited the most from a tight labor market?
Well, I would say workers, that kind of, the question in a labor market is often how much power do workers feel they have? How much can they ask for more in their jobs in terms of schedules or wages, or how easy is it for them to leave if they can't get those things that they secure? And I think in this tight labor market, that's been more true for workers at the bottom of the labor market. So we've seen tightening there and the signs of wage increases at some of the service sector jobs that were really impacted by the pandemic, both by the disruption of the shutdowns and by the exposure of being in essential work.
You also concluded that Wisconsinites saw opportunities and took them. And I'm wondering, what opportunities have they really been able to harness in these times?
Yeah, I think about a year ago, we started talking about, or there was a kind of popular conception of a great resignation, that workers were moving away from, or people were moving away from work and redefining themselves away from work and stopping working and, you know, kind of embracing life away from work. I think that was just wrong. What I think the evidence was, and you can see it in the Wisconsin data, is workers were taking the opportunities they saw and moving to new jobs. So there were a lot of quits, but there were consistently more hires than quits. People were leaving work and finding better jobs. And there are more workers in the state, you know, this summer, the highest number of workers in the state ever reported. You know, it's not that people kind of backed away from work and that's what describes or defines these shortages. Workers have really seen opportunity and have moved to better jobs. So we have more people working and we have a higher labor force participation rate today than we did last summer. But where people are working is different.
It's interesting you bring up the quits rate, which remains elevated at 4.2 million voluntary resignations for July, and that's 2.8% of the entire U.S. workforce. So people are quitting, perhaps still not concerned about the security of having another job lined up. Laura, is this the new normal or here for a longer term?
Well, I think there's a couple of questions. There is a short time cyclical issue here. We're in a tight labor market. The Fed, in fact, is taking action to to reduce inflationary pressure, and that will push up unemployment. That is intended to make workers have less options, right? That is the point of what the Fed is doing right now. We could have a debate about that, but what I would say is people right now see opportunity and are moving towards it. That, you know, there's really high quit rates, but there's even higher hire rates. That is, there are rates for hiring that are above the quit rates, which means more people are coming into the labor force. I mean, and that's sort of the story right now. And I don't think it is stable in a long-term way without some institutionalization of workers' power. So that I would say, you know, this is cyclical, but if unemployment goes back up, workers get more conservative about being willing to seek new work.
You also found, though, in these tight unemployment times, you found that it's not universal opportunity. Can you tell us about unemployment among communities of color and what you found with Black Wisconsinites in racial disparities?
Yeah, I mean, this is the racial disparity of the Wisconsin economy is sort of one of the most consistent and really the worst features of the economy. It's really important to know that even when things are a little better, they're better for all workers, but a little better means still means that Black workers in the state face unemployment rates more than twice as high as white unemployment rates. The share of workers in low wage jobs is much higher. And so, 1 year of kind of being able to move to a slightly better job does not is not able to overcome the immense inequality that has grown by race since the late 1970s, when things were relatively good, actually, for Black workers in the state relative to the national average. But so it isn't that it's been eternal. It has been the product of economic change and the way that racist exclusion has left workers out over the last 40 years. But I would say there's also some evidence the wage data for Black women and Black men has been slightly stronger growth from 2019 to now than for white men. And so the gap has closed a tiny bit, but it's a giant gap.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about a new report on worker conditions in Wisconsin. Laura Dresser here, Associate Director of COWS, formerly known as the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, as they look at labor and economic issues across our state. Where we're at now, you can join in 800-642-1234. Laura, on the topic of wage growth, you found Wisconsin experienced strong wage growth from 2019 to 2021, and this growth slightly closed some of the state's pronounced racial and ethnic pay disparities, as you mentioned, with Black women seeing wages rise by 13%. Why is this wage growth happening now, and, you know, will it continue that trend?
Yeah, so I think this is another place where you can see that opportunity. I think workers see opportunity in the labor market, and they see that they can move. You have the power of an exit threat in your current job. I will leave unless you improve supervision, stop harassment, pay me more, or give me better shifts. Like, workers have a little more power in the current job they have, and they have a little more power to see outside and say, well, if I move to that job, I would see my wages go up. And I think and this dynamic is especially true, as I said earlier, I think really in the lower wage labor markets, in the service labor markets, et cetera. And so I think this strength that we see in leisure and hospitality and food service, the strength of wage trends down there, always helps to close the gaps, because women and workers of color are concentrated in those industries. And if that's where that dynamic is most pronounced, And if those are the workers who saw, like, this work doesn't work for me. The pandemic really focused, I think, attention on the way that jobs that don't provide benefits, that wages are terribly low, and it's going to be called essential, but it's not going to be paid in any way that's essential. I think those workers, you know, kind of see their value more now, I hope, and are kind of pursuing making changes that get them to jobs that fit. And that helps close those racial disparities.
You make this really strong case that Wisconsinites want to work, are committed to working. Can you talk more about the labor force participation rate in Wisconsin as you've looked at it, you know, since 1979?
Yeah, for sure. So the labor force participation rate of Wisconsin, Wisconsinites, you know, kind of are working people. You know, we are more connected to the labor market consistently, as you just mentioned, since 1979, more connected to the labor market than the national average. And this remains true. And the current labor force participation rate, like two of three working age people actually are employed in the state. And that's more like 62% nationally. So a kind of 5% difference or extra work here. And the rate of working right now is higher than it was before the pandemic. The share of adults in the labor force is higher than it was in 2019. So those are some parts of what makes work here high. But the other thing that's really different about Wisconsin, or one major contributor to this, is women in the state. Women in Wisconsin work at much higher rates than women nationally. And that's one of the reasons our rate is always high.
How does higher education factor into this and a worker's earning potential in Wisconsin?
We probably are familiar with the idea that getting an education will pay off in terms of wages. And the report chapter on wages really digs into that and lets you see what is the impact of a 4-year degree, a 2-year degree, a high school degree, or not completing high school. How do those people fare in wages? And I would say that the strong evidence to keep in mind is that, you know, closing out a college degree really matters. Getting a 2-year college degree or a 4-year college degree really moves your wage. The median wage of those groups is higher than the national average. I mean, the statewide average. But also doing some college without completing a degree doesn't have a lot of impact. And so I think that's important to see that's the way the labor market kind of rewards these things. Employers rewards these things to completed degrees, but they make a difference. And especially the associate degree, a national, this move the state, move the earner's wage above the state average.
Labor economist Laura Dresser with us, associate director of COWS, the UW-Madison research group that works on solutions to social problems. Their new report focusing on Wisconsin jobs, wages, and organizing unions that we'll be talking about. Join in on your job outlook in Wisconsin, how it's changed, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A yearly labor report from COWS at UW-Madison gives us a clearer picture of Wisconsin jobs. And it says workers have acted on opportunities to improve their working conditions. And if formal and informal worker unionizing continues, Wisconsin may begin to see a longer term shift. Join in on how you view the job market here and how your job outlook has changed or stayed the same. 800-642-1234. Laura Dresser is associate director of COWS, lead author of the State of Working Wisconsin Report, and stays with us. Laura, we heard from Andrea in La Crosse, called and couldn't stay with us. And Andrea is a salaried engineer in a factory. And they think that the reason that there is such a demand for workers is because immigration is down. What role does immigration play in our labor market here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, this is such an important point. One of the things that's really going on in the Wisconsin economy, which has been predicted, and the point of demographer and economic development concern for a long time, is that the population is aging. A center on campus identified that from 2010 to 2019, the prime working age population in the state fell by 150,000 workers. And that's because the population is growing older and there isn't a lot of an equal replacement. It's about the aging of the baby boom. Some states are able to keep growing their labor force by having a much more dynamic in-migration, either from other states or from other countries. But I think we've done things to make this state seem unfriendly to immigrants. I think about, there have been policy choices that have been made that way. I think that the weather probably always works against us. Winter's hard. But thinking hard about how we make this a place to come work that people would be attracted to, it makes an enormous difference on those tight labor markets. And this is especially true in northern counties. This age, the demographic impact of the baby boom retirements is really concentrated in rural areas across the north of the state.
I wonder what could that mean then, what this demographic shift could mean for worker power over the next decade?
Yeah, that's the piece that is this longer term underlying fact, is that employer, given the demographics of the state, and if we don't change how attractive we are or how welcoming we are of immigrants from other states or nations, then workers will have more power because more workers will be retiring from the labor market than are coming into it. I think that's the longer term underlying thing that doesn't go away even in the cyclical fluctuations of this labor market.
Let's bring in Judy now in Eau Claire. Judy, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Well, first, I'd like to thank Ms. Dresser for her excellent research, continuing research in the Wisconsin economy. I've been reading that public service jobs are bleeding employees, not to retirement, but just leaving counties, cities, states, et cetera. As we see in our Chippewa County right now, that the county is considering a less work day. 4.5 hours rather than 5 hours to try to keep their employees there and keep them happy because they can't give them the wages that they deserve. So I wondered if she had a comment about that.
Thank you. And that, Laura, jumped out to me in your report in that category labeled government.
Yeah, this I think this is one of the crises in this, is that the private sector job wage growth has been pretty strong. There are all sorts of things, especially Act 10 and the fact that the state government is not distributing. We have this giant surplus in the state budget that could be supporting local units of government, schools, everybody to find ways to better reward their workers, but they don't have the resources to do it because the legislature is holding on to that. And I think it's put public jobs in this negative position. So yeah, it's one of the sectors that is still further behind. And it is one sector that is really impacted by the external opportunities that workers are seeing and the lack of ability to put more money into that because they can't just raise taxes or whatever. They need some of that money, some of the state surplus redistributed across the state to local units of government, to schools, so that that work can be honored.
And you compared to the trend across the country in the U.S., and it seems, with your data, more pronounced here in Wisconsin of the government jobs, you know, seeing such a loss.
Yeah. And I think my gut, I haven't done research on this, but my gut would be that, that what's going on is most states, with the surplus that this stronger economy has generated, they have invested that in government and in those jobs, and the ability to compete for workers, for teachers, for public sector workers. And Wisconsin, the legislature is just continues to sit on that money.
Laura Dresser here, Associate Director at COWS, the UW-Madison think tank, looks at issues surrounding labor and unionization, out with a new report. You can join in on working conditions, 800-642-1234. Laura, let's look to unionization. As companies around the country, we're seeing the headlines, you know, Amazon to Apple, just this tide of unionization, and we're also seeing it here in Wisconsin. How does this impact the workforce, especially in light of, you know, Act 10 those years ago?
Yeah, I want to paint a picture that is that workers are organizing now in informal and formal ways, signing up for unions or demanding more collectively from their jobs. So you can see that in Wisconsin. Again, this is another place where there has been a long term and quite pronounced decline, and a couple good years are not going to change that tide. But I think what we're seeing, you know, even in the state, even in under the conditions that Act 10 and the so-called right to work legislation that came very shortly after that, that makes unionization hard. It makes the logic of unions and the organizing of them very difficult. Even in this context, you can find PAPS theater workers organizing and winning an election. You can find workers at a print shop demanding to get paid on time, working collectively and considering unionization. You can see nurses
and I
really
just,
demanding more.
Yeah, I just want to pause there because we're almost out of time, but we saw hundreds of UW Health nurses seeking to be recognized as a union, called off their three-day work strike, Governor Evers intervening. What are you watching for there?
Well, I think the real question right now is what is to see the decision from the Employer Rights Commission, the Wisconsin Employer Rights Commission, that these workers can be recognized, and then UW will. So there's a technical or bureaucratic process that I think we're waiting on, that hopefully clarifies how these workers will be represented. But I think that no matter what the decision there, they're going to continue organizing and looking for a way to get their interests and patient care interests represented.
Laura, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Laura Dresser is Associate Director of COWS, formerly known as the Center for Wisconsin Strategy. We have a link to the report, State of Working Wisconsin 2022, at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.